Our speaker today is Dr. William Pierce, the chairman of the National Alliance, which is the world's foremost organization working for the long-term interest of white Americans and for people of European ancestry wherever they may live.
Hello. 2 weeks ago, I told you about the atrocious murders of four young white men and women in Wichita, Kansas last month by two blacks. Two of my reasons for telling you about these murders were, first, the fact that the controlled news media in America had imposed a total blackout outside the Wichita area on the news of these atrocious crimes. And second, the fact that the whites who were murdered didn't resist the blacks who murdered them. And I wanted to draw a lesson from this failure to resist. Well, another 2 weeks have passed, and the national Jewish news media have maintained their total blackout on the murders. And during this time, I have learned a few more details about the crimes which accentuate both points I made 2 weeks ago. What I told you in my earlier broadcast was that two black brothers, 20-year-old Jonathan Carr and 23-year-old Reginald Carr, invaded a white home in Wichita on the evening of December 14th, kidnapped the three white men and two white women in the home, all of them in their 20s, forced them to withdraw money from several ATM machines, then drove to a snow-covered soccer field on the outskirts of Wichita. There the blacks raped the two white women, then told all five of the whites to kneel in the snow and shot them in the back of the head one at a time. After that, the two blacks returned to the whites' home, burglarized it, and killed a pet dog they found there, a small gray terrier. One of the young white women they shot in the head didn't die, however. She regained consciousness, ran naked and bleeding through the snow for a mile, and summoned police, who arrested the blacks a few hours later. That's what the Jewish media bosses decided we didn't need to hear about, and they clamped a complete blackout on the story on December 15th. In eager collaboration with the Jewish media, local authorities, local politicians also imposed an embargo on all news about the affair. The local female district attorney, Nola Falston, repeatedly asserted that race was not a factor and that the rapes and murders would not be treated as hate crimes. What I have learned recently is that after the two blacks drove the five whites to the soccer field, they not only forced the white women to strip and then raped them, but they also forced all of the whites to put on a sex show for the amusement of the blacks. On that snowy soccer field, they forced the white men to engage in homosexual acts. They forced the white women to have sex with each other. And they forced the white men to have sex with the white women before shooting all of them. After the blacks forced the whites to kneel naked in the snow and shot them in the back of the head, they deliberately ran over them with one of the vehicles they were driving. This additional information was leaked from the grand jury, which heard the evidence in the case despite the official news embargo. Furthermore, 3 days earlier, the same two blacks murdered another white woman, Ann Walenta, a cellist in the Wichita Symphony Orchestra, while she was sitting in her car outside her home. And 4 days before that, on December 7th, they kidnapped, robbed, and pistol-whipped a white man, 23-year-old Andrew Schreiber, the manager of a Wichita convenience store. Nothing racial about any of that, right? And certainly nothing that the white public should be told about, right? I mean, it's certainly not as newsworthy as the dragging death of a black ex-convict in Jasper, Texas in 1998 by three white ex-convicts, is it? I mean, the Jasper killing was given top billing by all of the controlled news media in America and in Europe as well for 2 years. And the racial angle was emphasized over and over and over again. Hardened white racists drag innocent black man to death. So, obviously, the murders and rapes of five white people in Wichita by a couple of underprivileged and misguided black youths doesn't need any news coverage. Enough news already about interracial crime, right? No need to exacerbate racial tensions, right? Well, that's one of the points I wanted to accentuate. The other point is the total lack of resistance of the white victims. It now seems that the two blacks were armed only with a .380 caliber semi-automatic pistol. All of the killings were done with that same gun, and the police are still looking for it. Now, you certainly can be killed with a .380, especially if you're shot in the back of the head at close range. But it's not much of a man-stopper. It's a pretty anemic caliber, and it's only used because it's small and can be carried concealed easily. It's a ladies' gun. And yet, three able-bodied white men let two blacks armed only with a .380 pistol force them to stand and watch their women being raped and degraded, and even to participate in the degradation themselves. And then they knelt obediently in the snow and let themselves and their women be slaughtered one at a time. That's really embarrassing. One expects more of a white man. This sort of sheep-like behavior reminds me of a scene in one of my novels, Hunter, in which a group of white office workers kneel obediently on the floor and let a black with a straight razor go down the line and slit their throats one at a time. In my novel, the whites submit because they have been conditioned by the Jewish mass media not to resist blacks. They have been conditioned to regard any resistance to blacks as racist. When I wrote Hunter 12 years ago, I was concerned that perhaps I was getting a bit ahead of myself, and that to portray whites as so strongly conditioned by the Jewish media that they would meekly let themselves be butchered by blacks would not be credible to my readers. I asked myself, will most Americans believe that Jewish media propaganda can have that strong an effect on people? Well, I worried about it at the time, but I left the scene in the book. And what happened in Wichita last month suggests that I really wasn't getting too far ahead of myself after all. That's a real shame. Now let's talk about Jewish media propaganda for a while. Is it fair of me to describe it as deliberate, calculated, psychological conditioning designed to demoralize white people, and to emasculate white men in particular? Am I imagining things and believing that the mass media are slanted deliberately by the people who control them with the aim of weakening white people and softening them up for the slaughter? Do I believe such things only because I don't like Jews and am therefore too ready to attribute bad motives to them? Some listeners think that is the case. Some people suggest to me that the attitudes portrayed by the Jews and the entertainment they produce for white people simply reflect their prejudices, but that there's no purpose behind it to corrupt or weaken us. Nearly all Jews are liberals, they tell me, and so it is natural that they produce films and television shows that portray liberal attitudes. And I suppose, following that line of reasoning, that the way in which they cover the news for us also is simply an unconscious reflection of Jewish likes and dislikes with no ulterior motives behind it. Other listeners suggest to me that I am putting the cart before the horse to blame Jewish media propaganda for changing public attitudes and opinions. What the Jews put into their Hollywood films and television programming is simply a reflection of life in America, they tell me. Americans have become more liberal, they tell me, and the Jews of Hollywood and Madison Avenue simply are following that trend, not leading it. After all, they say, the Jews are businessmen, and they're just giving the American people what they want. And the same thing applies to the news. If the American public really wanted to know what happened in Wichita last month, then the Jewish media bosses certainly would have told them. But Americans don't want to hear that kind of news, they tell me. That sort of news has a racist flavor to it, and it makes Americans uncomfortable. That's the only reason the Wichita story wasn't covered. Americans didn't want to hear about it. On the other hand, they were interested in the Jasper, Texas dragging story. Americans felt that sort of story needed to be told in order to fight racism. That's why the Jewish media told it, and told it, and told it. Anyway, that's what some people tell me in order to explain why the Jewish media do what they do, why they suppress some news and exaggerate other news. Personally, I don't believe it. I believe that the Jewish media lead the trends instead of following them. I believe that the Jewish media bosses have a propaganda agenda. I believe that they use their control of the news and entertainment media in a calculated way to shape public attitudes and influence public behavior in America deliberately in order to achieve goals of their own. And I believe that those Jewish goals are inimical to our people. But you know, you should decide that for yourself. You shouldn't just take my word for it. Yesterday, a new Jewish film premiered. The name is Save the Last Dance. The film was made jointly by Paramount Pictures and MTV Films, both of which are subsidiaries of the Viacom Corporation. The Viacom Corporation is run by and largely owned by Jewish media boss Sumner Redstone, who was known to his parents as Murray Rothstein. And Redstone also acquired CBS recently, making him one of the top three media bosses in America, all three of them Jews, of course. Redstone has staffed his media empire with Jews from top to bottom. He has put in a Jewess, Sherry Lansing, is president of Paramount Pictures, for example. And Viacom's MTV division, which specializes in interracial entertainment for trendy young white people, is well represented by the executive there who handled the Save the Last Dance project, David Gale. Gale, a Jew, is senior vice president of MTV Films. Save the Last Dance is a film aimed at 13 to 17-year-old white girls. Its message to these teenaged white girls is that sex with black boys is cool. Very briefly, the storyline is this. Sarah is a white high school girl who lives in a very white small town in Illinois with her mother. Sarah loves to dance, and her ambition is to become a ballet dancer. Then Sarah's mother is killed in an accident, and Sarah moves to Chicago to live with her father. In Chicago, she attends a mostly black high school, meets a black boy who is into hip-hop, and the two of them are drawn together by their shared interest in dancing, although their dance styles are as different as black and white. And so, of course, they end up in bed together, despite the objections of Sarah's racist father. I might not have mentioned this film to you if it were simply another piece of the race-mixing filth the Jews of Hollywood have been churning out during the last few years. All of this filth has the same aim, but with most of it, the people who don't want to see the truth about what the Jews are up to could argue that it is simply typically low-grade Hollywood entertainment which uses interracial sex for spice, for titillation, but that there's no evil motive behind it, no intent to encourage interracial sex. Well, they can't argue that about Save the Last Dance. This is a film which is aimed squarely at teenaged white girls, by far the most impressionable and susceptible segment of the white population, and its intent is to make them more receptive to the idea of interracial sex. All sorts of advertising promotions have been launched for this film, and they're all aimed at teenaged white girls. If you want to know what's on the minds of the people who made this film, go to their very own website, SaveTheLastDance.com, and read what they say. Clearly, encouraging interracial sex was the thing most on their minds. The film's Jewish producer, Robert Cort, discusses his motivation with his co-producer, David Madden. They say that they and others at Paramount wanted to produce a film about, quote, interracial romance and the social impact created by such a subject. We felt a movie could explore what those obstacles were for people involved in such relationships, particularly young people in high school, end quote. So the Jews at Paramount Pictures turned to a black director who has a fixation on interracial sex, Thomas Carter. According to the movie's official website, SaveTheLastDance.com, Carter, quote, had been looking for a story about interracial relationships that he could bring to the screen. Carter says the film positively reinforces the possibilities for people to love and understand each other, even when they are from different backgrounds and races. End quote. Well, that's just a small sampling. Look at some of the film clips from Save the Last Dance that you can view free on the Internet. Look at some of the promotions that are so obviously intended to persuade teenaged white girls to see the film and to imitate Sarah's behavior. The clear message of the film to these teenaged white viewers is, go thou now and do likewise. The last thing I want to do is put more money into Sumner Redstone's pockets. But I recommend that you see the film for yourself so that it will stick in your mind and you still will remember it when the time for the cleansing of America comes. I don't want to give you the impression that there is something special about Redstone or the other Jews at Viacom. Some Jewish media push interracial sex more blatantly than others, but they're all behind it. All of the Jewish newspapers and magazines, from the New York Times and Newsweek magazine on down. All of the Jewish film and television producers. All of the Jewish advertising agencies. It's not just a Redstone thing, or a Viacom thing, or a Paramount Pictures thing. It's a Jewish thing. I'll give you another example. The Miramax division of Disney also has a new film promoting sex between teenaged white girls and black boys. The name of the Disney film is O. Although it hasn't been released yet, there's plenty of information available about it. It's been finished for more than a year, but the release has been postponed several times, reportedly because the Jewish bosses at Miramax, Barb and Harvey Weinstein, were nervous about some of the sex and violence in the film. There's a horrific scene in the film where the black hero brutally rapes his pretty blonde teenaged girlfriend. The Weinstein brothers are very close to both Al Gore and Hillary and Bill Clinton, and it has been rumored that they were concerned that controversy over the film might hurt Gore's chances in the recent presidential election. Perhaps Michael Eisner, the Jewish boss of Disney, Miramax's parent company, was worried too. And maybe the film's Jewish executive producer, Michael Levy, also expressed concern. Unless there's another postponement, however, O finally should be released sometime in the first half of this year. You should see that one, too, in order to steel yourself for the hard and bloody things we will need to do in the future. And really, that's what this is all about. As important as it is for white Americans to be informed about the criminality of blacks and the hatred that blacks have for us, as important as it is for us to be informed about atrocities such as those in Wichita last month, what is far more important is that we understand the systematic and deliberate distortion and suppression of the news by the Jewish bosses of the news media. The Wichita rapes and murders are more important as evidence of Jewish intent than of black criminality. And as important as it is for decent white Americans to be aware of the sort of destructive filth coming out of Hollywood which is targeting our children, what is far more important is for us to understand the systematic nature of this destructive filth, to understand that there is a purpose behind it, and to understand what that purpose is and whose purpose it is. On these broadcasts, I believe it's fair to say that I try harder than anything else to make myself clear. I try to state things as simply and unambiguously as I can. I try to find the most compelling evidence I can and to present it accurately and in a way that makes its meaning easy to grasp. Whenever I can, I use evidence that listeners can check for themselves if I tell them where to look. Certainly that's true of the things of which I've spoken on this broadcast, both the Wichita rapes and murders and the Jewish films promoting miscegenation. And I try to draw my conclusions from the evidence in a way that makes those conclusions unavoidable for any reasonable listener. The principal conclusion I have drawn in this broadcast is that the Jews who dominate our news and entertainment media are not simply businessmen trying to maximize their profits like any other businessmen. They are men who also have a political, social, cultural, and racial agenda. They report the news selectively in order to advance their agenda, and they produce entertainment for the public designed to advance their agenda. Among other things on their agenda are the moral disarmament of the white public, the destruction of any sense of white identity or white pride, the inculcation of a sense of white guilt, and the paralysis of our will to resist the total Jewish domination of our society, the paralysis of our will to survive. Now that's a strong conclusion to draw just from the evidence I've presented in this broadcast. But I've presented corroborating evidence in more than 200 other broadcasts. The selective reporting of the news in a way designed to make whites feel guilty, and the production of Hollywood films which attempt to persuade teenaged white girls that they should look favorably on sex with blacks fit in perfectly with the Jews' support for open borders, the Jews' tireless work for diversity and multiculturalism, the Jews' advocacy of more and more hate crime legislation, the Jews' campaign against the Second Amendment, the Jews' efforts to censor the Internet and obtain legislation against speech crime. Look at the Jewish motives and activities in the light of history. Look at the way in which America has changed demographically, culturally, and morally during the past half century under the impact of Jewish propaganda and Jewish policies. These changes did not come about by accident. They are the result of design. The biggest and most important single factor in the Jewish campaign against white America is the Jewish control of the mass media of news and entertainment. Most Jews, of course, are not media bosses. Most Jews are not in a position to plan the selective reporting of the news or produce films designed to encourage interracial sex the way Sumner Redstone and Michael Eisner and the Weinstein brothers are. But all of them, or nearly all of them, support the same things these Jewish leaders do. What is happening to America is not simply the consequence of having a small number of powerful and evil Jews in the media. It is happening as a consequence of having 6 million Jews in America. A small number of them control our mass media. The rest provide the Jewish tribal infrastructure which makes that control possible. Again, I say to you, don't just take my word for it. Think about it for yourself. Check the evidence for yourself. Draw your own conclusions. But don't just continue sitting on your hands and ignore what is being done to your country, to your civilization, and to your race. Thanks for being with me again today.
You have been listening to a presentation of American Dissident Voices. The speaker was Dr. William Pierce, chairman of the National Alliance. The program was sponsored as a public service by National Vanguard Books, America's foremost supplier of patriotic books and tapes. For $2, we'll send you our newest 72-page illustrated catalog with descriptions and ordering information for more than 600 books and tapes of interest to patriots. Many of the items in the National Vanguard Books catalog are available nowhere else. Our mailing address is National Vanguard Books, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.